Special Prosecutor John Durham spent more than 2 years investigating whether CIA interrogators and contractors had used illegal methods to question detainees who died in American custody in Iraq and Afghanistan. Attorney General Eric Holder had asked the prosecutor to look for violations of the anti-torture laws. But Durham finished his work without prosecuting anyone because he said there wasn't enough evidence to convict beyond a reasonable doubt. The decision to investigate CIA personnel and contractors infuriated the intelligence community and many Republicans on Capitol Hill. And the decision to close the cases without charges could provoke a similar firestorm among human rights groups. Carrie Johnson, NPR News, Washington.
This is NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from the Melville Charitable Trust, supporting solutions to prevent and end homelessness on the web at melvilletrust.org.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Subaru of Champaign County, featuring the Subaru Impreza, with standard all-wheel drive and an EPA highway rating of 36 mpg, depending on conditions. More information is available at SubaruofChampaign.com or at their location on Route 45 in Savoy.
Good morning and welcome to Focus, our morning talk program. Today's first hour comes from the Focus Archives, so as you listen, keep in mind we will not be taking calls. Good morning and welcome to Focus on WILL AM 580. I'm Craig Cohen. The number of farmers' markets in America has more than tripled in the last two decades, from less than 1,800 as of 1994 to more than 6,000 by 2010. And yet, farmers' markets are responsible for less than 3% of food sales in the U.S. Certainly, local supermarkets and restaurants will always trump farmers' markets when it comes to convenience, and many such stores and restaurants tout their own efforts to offer food that's locally grown. But shoppers tout other reasons for frequenting farmers' markets, from quality, freshness, and taste to what they see as a special connection, a direct interaction with farmers in their community. In this hour of the program, we'll discuss farmers' markets and what value they bring to the communities they serve, and we have two guests with us. Janine McLaughlin is a food writer, blogger, and founder of the Rustic Kitchen Cooking School. She's also the author of Farmers Markets of the Heartland, a book which recounts her visits to farmers' markets throughout the Midwest, including a number here in Illinois. Janine McLaughlin, welcome to Focus.
Thank you, Craig. It's great to be with you.
Glad to have you with us. And in studio with us this morning is Lisa Brault. She's Economic Development Specialist Director from Urbana's Market at the Square, a farmer's market featured prominently in McLaughlin's book. Lisa Brault, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Janine, let's begin with this. What factors do you hear attendees of farmers' markets citing as to why they prefer to shop there? What are they looking for from a farmer's market that you just can't get anywhere else?
One of the things that I noticed was that people view the farmers market as their town square. This is a place where people gather. So you did touch on that in your intro, where people like to be around kindred spirits. And I thought that was a wonderful sense of community that I was very touched to see in every market, big or small. The other thing is flavor. So what you'll find at your farmer's market that you might not find at the grocery store will be a variety of Asian vegetables, for example, or different kinds of honey. I know you have Campbell apiaries at the Urbana Market at the Square. You will also maybe find urban honey, which changes from spring to summer to fall depending on what flowers are in season. So you really get distinctive flavors that you're not going to find anywhere else.
So, Lisa, the difference is, you know, taking the honey example, you go to your local supermarket, there are going to be maybe several brand names of honey, maybe a store brand as well, but kind of the taste is roughly the same from one to the next, and yet at farmers markets it's different. Why?
Absolutely. I think in using honey as an example, you don't, when you're going to the grocery store, you don't know where it's from, and or even if it was produced in the United States. So, and supermarkets are pretty much about uniformity with things. You know, when you're buying a product like honey, you want it to taste like honey. And most people don't realize that honey can taste differently depending on the flowers that it was produced from. And I think that's a revelation to a lot of people. And you can experience the same thing with a tomato. A tomato from the grocery store is pretty much going to taste like a tomato. During tomato season at a farmer's market, which we're entering right now, there is a huge variety of heirloom tomatoes, and all of them have a different taste. So I think farmers markets are a really good introductory point for people to discover that items that they thought just tasted a certain way actually taste a myriad of ways.
Is that question of flavor, is it in part a question of quality or a question of freshness? What goes into it that makes it a different experience?
I think it's both, actually. I think most items at the market are harvested or picked or bottled or produced within a day or two of the market actually happening. And when you're shopping from a traditional grocery store, that's not the case. In terms of produce, sometimes that produce has been sitting on a truck for more than a week, maybe even longer than that, and it's traveled a great distance. In terms of quality, I think, when you have large monoculture farms growing a certain item, you're looking for, again, for uniformity, for things to look a certain way. They need to be able to travel in a certain way. So quality is not so much the issue, whereas when you have a smaller producer who's bringing things to market, they know that they're reaching a consumer at farmers markets who is a little more discerning and who cares a little more about those things.
Now, Janine,
I would also add, if I could add about the flavor, the quality, the freshness, the other factor that goes into that, and Lisa had mentioned heirloom varieties of tomatoes. I found a farmer who was growing 20 different varieties of strawberries, and they all tasted different. And so there's a different philosophy with these farmers that are selling at the farmers market where they can focus on different varieties, which goes back to the seed or the plant or back to the origin of that fruit, vegetable, cow, etc. And that's part of what contributes to that variety that you'll find at the farmers market.
This is Focus on Illinois Public Media. I'm Craig Cohen, and we're discussing farmers markets this hour with food writer Janine McLaughlin, author of Farmers Markets of the Heartland, and Lisa Braltz, director of the Urbana Market at the Square Farmers Market. We welcome you to the conversation as well. We'd like to know if you ever visit your local farmers market. If so, why? If not, why not? And, of course, we welcome any other questions or comments that you may have about farmers markets. You can call us at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. That's 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL, or email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. Lisa, what controls are in place to ensure quality at farmers markets?
Well, it really depends on the market. I think there are some smaller markets throughout the United States where there maybe aren't controls. I think in my case, I am able to go out and look at farms and sort of be that gatekeeper a little bit to go check out farm, make sure it's where they say, where the farmer says it is, and that they're growing what they say they're growing, and maybe looking a little bit at their agricultural practices. But not every farmer's market has a person who is able to do that. And actually, Janine mentions in her book, she talks about David Rand, who was the farm forager for the Green City Market. And that was his job, was to not just recruit vendors, but, have a look at their premises and find out what they were doing and sort of match it up to what they said they were doing. And I think as people get more savvy about their food, those sorts of verification processes are going to become even more important. And I know at Urbana's Market at the Square, we are looking at ways to sort of step that up. As I mentioned to you off the air, I have a lot of plates in the air. It's not always easy to get to farms. There are actually some places, just a few, that I haven't visited yet. And this is my fifth season. It is really hard. And we have farmers from all over the state of Illinois. So sometimes that's an entire day back and forth, and an hour visit, that's an entire workday. So, as time goes on, I think we'll enhance what we already do to make sure that the quality is as high as possible at the market.
One of the things that some markets require is a third-party certification. A lot of small farmers cannot afford the financial burden of the USDA organic certification, but there are a number of other certifying agencies where a third party will come, they'll certify the farm, look at their practices, look at what inputs they use in terms of fertilizers, whether organic or not. And that's a way that farmers can help communicate to their consumers what practices they use. But one of the things that I find is that for the most part, farmers are very straightforward and honest. Not everyone can afford to be organic in the Midwest because of the yields, but they'll help the eater understand what sorts of things go into the food that they produce. And really, the shopper should talk to the market organizers and find out what are the guidelines. You know, what are there are some markets that when they first started out a number of years ago, they had what they called reciprocal agreements, where farmers could bring in food from other farms in different states. Those have fallen by the wayside for the most part as consumers become more demanding and as these smaller farms become more successful in bringing enough food to the market as their business grows.
I will say, sort of to tag along on that comment, reciprocal agreements and bringing things in from other states or other areas, as Janine said, it's not happening as much. But I think this season in particular, I know because of the late freeze that we experienced here in Illinois, a lot of our fruit crop was lost, particularly in central Illinois and northern Illinois. And I communicate a lot with other farmers markets in Illinois, and this was a question that they, a lot of these markets were struggling with is, you know, do we bring fruit producers from somewhere else? What do we do? Do we bring peaches from Georgia? Because some of those items are attractors to farmers markets. They attract people to farmers markets. We know at our market that there are some people who just come to the market a few times a year to pick up sweet corn, peaches, and tomatoes. Those are the most important things to them. And if you don't have them, they're not going to come. So then that question becomes, and it really depends on the market, do we bring things in from another area, or do we just say, hey, you know, seasonality, that's kind of how it is. You know, if we have bad weather, then this is what happens. And I think a lot of markets ended up deciding to bring things in from other states where they didn't experience that weather.
So the question then becomes, what trumps what, locality or quality, which is more important?
Well, and that is a big question. Several years ago, Time Magazine ran an article about local or organic, and it was a cover story. And I don't think it's a question that can ever really be answered. I think there are definite advantages to both. I'm a big believer in local, but I think a lot of people also want to eat food that's as clean as possible. And you have a chance at that when you know your producer and can have a conversation and have some verification practices at a market to find out what is going on with your food. So even if it's not certified organic, if you learn about growing practices, you can make a much more informed decision.
To follow up on that question of verification, Pam Dempsey of CU Citizen Access reported for Illinois Public Media today on efforts that you make, Lisa, to ensure the quality at market at the square. So I thought before we go any further, it might be useful for us to hear that report. Then I want to ask both of you some questions about it. Here's Pam's report.
It's Saturday morning at Urbana's Market at the Square, one of the largest farmers markets in Illinois. The market spans a portion of the parking lot of Lincoln Square Mall along Vine Street. Between 6,000 and 7,000 visitors browse among the dozens of vendors each weekend who peddle fresh produce grown in Illinois.
So there's 250, there's three. Last week seemed a little slow and steady.
John Chernis sells fresh produce that he grows on his farm. Clark McPhail is one of his regulars.
I've been buying stuff from John's market here, Blue Moon, for forever. And I always buy peas and green beans at this market over here.
With dozens of local farmers, the market offers more access to Illinois-grown food produce than neighboring grocery stores on any given Saturday between May and November.
Tonight may be a vegetarian night, so it may be beets, green beans, new potatoes.
Some of Clark McPhail's dinner comes from Blue Moon Farm about 12 miles away, an established organic farm that grows between 40 and 50 different crops. On a sunny day in May, Urbana's Market at the Square director, Lisa Braltz, pays a visit.
If you're buying produce, you're buying strawberries from somebody, then I have somehow verified, like the visit that we're doing today, that that item was grown by that farmer, so you can count on it being producer only.
Hey, John, how's it going? Good to see you.
Good to see you.
Yeah, you ready?
Yeah.
All right.
As part of today's visit, Lisa meets with John Chernis, owner of Blue Moon Farm. They tour the property and discuss the crops. Urbana's farmers market accepts only vendors within the state of Illinois. For John Chernis, local is relative.
The question is, to me, is what is your goal for buying that product? If it's flavor and taste, then wherever you need to go to get that specific flavor and taste. If it's about supporting your neighbor and building a stronger community, then it gets much closer.
For other markets, local may be limited to produce grown within an hour-long drive, or as far away as two states.
I feel like the market's role, it's a gateway into local foods. And I also think that farmers markets are the only place anymore where farmers and eaters can have direct contact with each other.
That gateway was made easier for low-income families when Urbana's farmers market began accepting food stamp benefits a few years ago. Diana Bosterman learned about the farmers market from ads on TV. She learned about using her food stamp benefits from a social worker.
I like shopping at the farmers market and look at all the fabulous stuff they have over there. A lot of homemade things, the vegetables, the fruits.
Again, Clark McPhail.
Well, this is a great place to start. You can see the variety of things that are on offer, and the growers and the sellers, they're quite knowledgeable, and they can tell you how recently things were picked, how fresh they are. So, you know, it's a great place to be introduced to the marketplace.
For Illinois Public Media, I'm Pam Dempsey of CU Citizen Access.
And that report is part of our series on health and wellness and is funded in part by a grant from the Lumpkin Family Foundation. Lisa, we heard you in that report visiting a Market at the Square vendor. What sorts of questions do you ask when you go on those visits?
It really depends on the vendor. For example, I'm not going to ask about livestock or eggs if I'm just visiting a fruit and vegetable vendor like John Chernis from Blue Moon Farm, who was the vendor that I spoke with in that piece. I will ask about whether they start their own seeds, where they order their seeds from. I'll want to look at all of their outbuildings, if they have seed starting sheds or hoop houses. I want to see all of those. I like to walk the fields. I really like to take pictures of food in progress, as I call farms, because I find that our patrons are very responsive to visuals of things that happen, not just at the market, but also on the farms. If there's livestock, I'll want to see the livestock, how it's kept, where they live, what they eat. I will ask questions about refrigeration and cooling on site. I'll ask questions about how the produce is transported to the market. In a lot of cases, I already know this because I'm at the market at 5:30 in the morning when a lot of these people arrive. So I've seen how it's transported. But I take a lot of photos, not just of the fields, but of the buildings and seeds being started and other things. Because, again, I feel like it's good for me to have a record of those things, but it's also really good for our patrons to see those things, too.
How is that role different from a formal inspection by, say, a state agency?
Well, I don't have any formal training. I'm not a farmer. I don't have a degree in horticulture. I'm not an expert on yield. And these are, I wouldn't call them shortcomings, but they're certainly things that we need to investigate as we move forward and as our customers become more food savvy and ask more questions, we're going to have to work a little bit harder. And I think also David Rand mentioned in Janine's book that farmers are extending their growing season. So whereas it used to be you would never see tomatoes in early June at farmers markets, depending on how they're being grown, if they're hydroponic or they're being grown in greenhouses using a lot of heat, you might actually see those things. So we have to work a lot harder, I think, now than even 10 years ago to verify.
But these kinds of visits is really maybe essentially sort of a gut check just to make sure, yes, they're growing these crops here. This is local. This is and they're doing things roughly the right way. So we have no qualms about them selling at the farmer's market.
Right. And there's another side to that. 99% of the people who are buying food at farmer's markets from farmers will never see that person's farm. They'll never go there. Even farms that are relatively close by, unless there's something attracting them there, they're not going to actually go there. So for me, it's also a way to help market farms to patrons. Not many farms have websites or Facebook pages or Twitter feeds. So this is a way to help me get the word out about what those farms are doing as well. Most farms are more than receptive to that idea. We want patrons to see where their food is coming from. And so that's part of the verification process too. It's not just peace of mind. It's also just learning something and knowledge.
Janine, we have an email from Daniel in Charleston. He says, we have a farmer's market there once a week. Seems like, he says, some of the individuals selling have bought produce from a distributor while passing them off as locally grown. He asks, how can you be certain you are getting locally grown produce?
Wow. It's such a challenge because in some cases it is buyer beware. One of the things that I overheard someone saying is, oh, look at their cases are labeled such and such, and I knew that particular farm, and I knew that they just bought the same cases that a large vendor might use just because that was sturdy enough for them to ship. Daniel should talk to the producers, ask them where they got it. Typically, people are honest. You would also want to check with the organizers to see if they are like Lisa, where they have some protocols in terms of guaranteeing that what's grown at that farm is only what's on the table and nothing from somewhere else. I do have a philosophy where I tell people they should eat food where they could visit, not necessarily that they will visit that particular farm, but you can get a sense that by talking to the person, asking about their growing practices, you can get a sense that if they can speak knowledgeably about it, that they are trustworthy. And if you think that they are importing foods, you should talk to the market organizers, say this isn't acceptable unless it's disclosed. For example, I saw a farm that had a sign that said Traverse City Cherries, where they were not located in Traverse City, and they had gotten permission to supplement with cherries that had not been killed in the frost from earlier this year. So you really need to be your own advocate. Talk to people, ask questions, and if you can, get an understanding as to what is produced at that farm that you're buying from.
This is Focus on Illinois Public Media. I'm Craig Cohen, and today we're discussing farmers markets with food writer Janine McLaughlin. She's author of Farmers Markets of the Heartland. Also with us here in the studio is Lisa Braltz, director of the Market at the Square Farmers Market in Urbana. We welcome you to the conversation. We'd like to know if you ever visit your local farmers market. If so, why? If not, why not? Of course, we welcome other questions or comments about farmers markets. You can call us at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. That's 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL, or send your email to will-talk@illinois.edu. We have a caller on line one from Champaign. Good morning. Welcome to the show.
Yes, good morning. I was wondering if your guests can tell us what is the cost for a vendor to present in Urbana's farmers market, and do they have to have an annual contract, or they can show up monthly or weekly? How does it work out, and how much an average vendor pays for one stall?
All right, thanks very much for the question. Lisa?
I can answer that. For produce vendors, baked goods, artisans, prepared foods, all of those vendors pay the same amount per space per week, and that is $20 per space per week, which my understanding is it's a bargain considering the size of our market and the number of people it attracts. Most food growers sign up for the entire year up front because they know they're going to be there every day, whether it's raining or in one year it snowed. They're going to be there no matter what. But the option is there for all vendors to go week to week. We do ask produce vendors to sign up for, a large chunk of the season, maybe not the whole season, but a large chunk of the season to ensure that they're going to be there for a certain number of weeks and that they're not just showing up for a couple of weeks with one product, because that is, we still have to put the efforts to verify their farm, go visit their farm, see what they're doing. And if they're only there for a couple of weeks, that's a lot of effort to put into that for kind of a limited payoff. So, but for if you're an artisan or a prepared food vendor, provided that you have all the proper permits, you're able to come to the market for $20 a week.
Janine, you used the phrase buyer beware earlier in reference to the concern that one listener had just raised about the question of something being passed off as locally grown that was not. In 2010, there was some concern raised about a farmer's market vendor in California selling food allegedly packaged in Mexico. The operator denied that allegation. Closer here to Illinois in late 2010, early 2011, there was a salmonella outbreak linked to Sprouts from some sandwiches sold at Jimmy John's. Initial investigation suggested there might be a link to a local owner of an Urbana Sprouts farm, but that owner denied the Sprouts came from his operation and took steps to tighten safety measures at his facility. And in fact, that farm, at least I believe, is one of your vendors,
mm-hmm.
right? What impact, Janine, does an allegation like that have on a farmer's market itself?
Oh, that's an excellent question. For the most part, I have found that shoppers have confidence in their growers and in their markets. When something like this happens, it gives people pause. There have been other situations where cheese producers, and I'm thinking of someone in Wisconsin, and an inspector came and they found higher bacteria than they should have. So what I go back to again and again is shake the hand that feeds you and find your growers. Have the confidence that you trust that they're producing what they say they're producing. And a lot of that comes from shopping and asking questions of fellow shoppers, asking questions of people like Lisa, who clearly know what they're talking about. I think for the most part, if there's a situation where there has been an outbreak of some sort of bacteria or something, this happens more frequently, I have found, in the larger industrial operations that that are doing things on such a massive scale, it's, you know, frankly hard to keep everything clean. And I hope I don't get sued over that, because I know that there are a lot of organizations that are very aggressive when people are actively trying to talk about the food supply and get some solutions that will work for everyone. I have found that these situations are relatively minor. Certainly, they get a tremendous amount of attention. I remember that situation in California where the worker who first reported that also reported that she felt threatened and that it was not an open situation where she could point out that this was happening. And the blogosphere exploded and there was a lot of attention. So what I find gratifying is that when something like this does happen, it is rapidly addressed and people are genuinely upset about it, as opposed to at other times it would be dismissed. So we really have come quite far in terms of what our expectations are of our producers.
Lisa, did you experience any backlash, any concern, anything relating to the salmonella outbreak and concern over the potential link, as it turns out maybe not to have been a link, to the one vendor you had at the farmer's market?
I think it does more damage to the farm rather than the market, and the vendor in question that we're talking about is still selling at Urbana's Market at the Square and continues to sell to as many people as they always have. So I think, but as a food person, as somebody who's involved with food in the community, not just with the market, but with other organizations as well, I did get asked that question. And I think Janine's right. I think people do get really upset, because really most of us are on the same page here. We all want food that's safe, from farmer to eater and all points in between. I don't think anybody wants to make anybody sick, and I think people are doing everything they can to make sure that that doesn't happen, particularly at the local level, because people can come and look that farmer in the eye. And if something happens, you know, those people have had a relationship already. So I think actually, you know, when you have those smaller producers, you know, they don't want anyone to get sick. They don't want to do anything that could jeopardize those relationships.
We're due to take a short break, and we'll have more of your phone calls and emails about farmers markets for Janine McLaughlin and Lisa Braltz in just a minute here on Focus.
There's talk, and there's talk that matters. When you want to be part of a national conversation, turn to Talk of the Nation to hear experienced voices, informed views, and smart callers. We tackle the day's top stories and talk through the topics and issues that affect you. I'm Neil Cunningham. Join me for Talk of the Nation from NPR News starting Tuesday, September 4th at 1 p.m. on WILL AM 580.
You're listening to a rebroadcast of a previous Focus program. As this conversation is pre-recorded, we're not taking phone calls today. This is Focus. And welcome back to Focus on WILL Radio and online at will.illinois.edu. I'm Craig Cohen. We can get our food from most anywhere. Restaurants and grocery stores abound in most communities across the country. Even if you live in a small town, many food options are just a short drive away. But much of what we bring home from the grocery store and much of what many restaurants, especially the fast food variety, serve is processed or prepackaged and probably not all that fresh. Then there are those farmers markets. Growers, producers, artisans bring fresh food from their local communities to such markets every week. And some consumers absolutely swear by various seasonal markets and farm stands. We're discussing the potential benefits benefits of vibrant farmers markets for a community, and we welcome your experiences shopping at them or perhaps bringing your own fare to market. My guests, Janine McLaughlin, food writer and author of Farmers Markets of the Heartland, and Lisa Braltz. She's the director of the Market at the Square for the city of Urbana. She and Market at the Square are featured prominently in McLaughlin's book. And let's take another call. We have someone on from line one in Champaign. Good morning.
Hi. Lisa does a great job. If I had her job, I'd probably be on Valium or something, you know, calm down, especially during the summer. In terms of, you said $20, that's got to be a unit size.
Yes, that's per space. So if a vendor is only taking up one space and spaces are roughly 10 feet by 16 feet, then they're going to pay that $20 per week for that one space. More spaces you take, the more money you pay.
What's the largest one that takes the most space? I mean, you don't have to tell the vendor, but, you know, what's 10 units or how many?
We have a vendor who actually rents 19 spaces for the entire season.
Wow. Okay. And what about in terms of, I know that in terms of merchandising, a lot of times location, I would think that it probably is determined by the number of years that a vendor's been with you or not.
Yes. Seniority is big, and some of the vendors have been out there for, well, one vendor has been there the entire time that the market's been open. We'll be celebrating our 35th anniversary next year. And there are several other vendors who have been there 20 years, 15 years. And they are the people who really, when I moved to the area in 1996, the market was 1.5 rows of the parking lot that it's currently in. Now we take up the entire parking lot. So those people in that westernmost row, they've been at the market the longest.
So in terms of the price is very reasonable, and it's good that you could keep it at that amount, you know. I mean, $20, especially for the smaller vendors, you know. So anyway, you do a great job.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thanks very much for the call. Janine, while we're talking dollars and cents, what sort of impact can farmers markets have, on economic development for a given community?
You know, the Leopold Center in Iowa has done research on this, and I don't have the figure at my fingertips, but so I'll be paraphrasing, but the economic contribution is quite substantial because, so the farmer not only can then pay workers, but then they also can be shoppers and, pardon me.
Well, I'll tell you what, while
you participate in their own local economy in terms of being able to have a viable small business. So it's not as if those dollars are going far afield.
I wanted to give Lisa a chance to step in there.
And to continue on that, in addition, at least at our farmers markets, and I know in several other farmers markets throughout the state of Illinois, many of these markets are held in a downtown area where there's lots of retail and restaurants and other things to do. And those farmers markets attract people to that area. So not only are the patrons spending money at the farmers market, they're also going to the bakery in town, and they're having lunch at the restaurant, and they're checking out some of the retail in downtown. And I know that the retailers in the area closest to the market, really, they plan a lot around our it's a 28-week season, so a 7-month season. They plan very heavily around that because they know that they're going to experience an increase in foot traffic. And I think a lot of downtown areas are trying to bring that foot traffic even deeper into their downtown areas, not just the area immediately around a market, but also further into town. So it really can be sort of a flashpoint in terms of economic development for certain communities. And I know in Urbana, it definitely has an effect.
Janine, I imagine some people may do what you did for this book, traveling around to a variety of farmers markets over the course of several weeks.
I hope they do. I found during my trip most of the farmers markets are toward the weekend, Thursday, Friday. Sometimes I would visit 4 markets on a Saturday before driving home. But one of the reviewers talked about how this is a great tour guide or a tour book if you are going to be traveling in the Midwest. It can help you find some of the great farmers markets. And so I hope people will set off on their own journey. I only cover 76 markets in this book, which is
is that all?
A lot. Is that all? But there are so many more in the Midwest. And I'll give my shameless plug right now. I will be at the Urbana Market at the Square, kind of on my return tour on August 4th. That's a Saturday. I'll have books available if people would like to come out and say hello and tell me what they like about the Urbana Market and get a book.
So you traveled to all of these farmers markets throughout the Midwest, as far north as Minnesota. You went out as far west, I guess, is what, Missouri, and then eastward toward Indiana?
On the east, it was Michigan and Ohio, then to Indiana, Illinois, Missouri, Iowa, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and I did kind of a big swirl. So I found some fantastic markets. Northport, Michigan had a charming market with about six vendors outside the Stone Train Depot with a beautiful view of Grand Traverse Bay. And then other markets are at the foot of a courthouse. Stillwater, Minnesota's market is near their courthouse, and the Des Moines market has hundreds of vendors, and they're right in downtown Des Moines. So really I saw all kinds of markets, and the commonality was that the shoppers were so enthusiastic about their farmers.
Is that the commonality that you think you see, Lisa, as well?
Oh, absolutely. And as Janine's talking about this, and I think it was 2010 that she was at our market. Is that right, Janine?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it just reminds me of people who follow the Grateful Dead or the Dave Matthews Band or Fish or somebody around the country to see them over and over. And it's funny, I was just reading, I was following a Twitter feed the other day, and somebody said farmers, or maybe it was local, it was actually from a restaurant here in town, and somebody said farmers are the new rock stars. So I think, and people do get really enthusiastic, and they get excited when they see a farmer at a restaurant or out of the context of a market event or another food event. I've had people say, I saw John Chernus at Target or whatever. That's not really a true story, but it's something similar, you know. So I think people do get really excited about farmers markets. It's an event for them. I think there are some people like Janine who like to travel to other places where the farmers market is a huge attraction for them. Or if they go to another place, they want to know where a market is so that they can check it out. And I have also heard from many people who are new to our community, to Urbana, because the University of Illinois attracts so many people from other places, who tell me they are so relieved that they discovered the farmers market because it's something that reminds them a little bit of where they came from, particularly if it's a large city. You know, it's a place where they feel like they can integrate into the community, but it's familiar because it's something that they had and were close to when they left their other home.
Let's take another call. We have a caller from Champaign County on line one. Good morning. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Excuse my voice. I could probably go as an alias here. But I have two concrete proposals for the local market here and then a broader question about the cultural and the other implications of, you know, the marketplace of ideas, as it were. But one is power drops. It's you've been around so long, these obnoxious generators that some of the vendors use seems to me that wouldn't be that expensive to get a little electricity that would, you know, go in an enhanced rent for the space or something like that.
We
even meter it. The other one is maybe some portable, movable prosceniums. This is part of the idea of the cultural. It's nice to have all the buskers and et cetera, but maybe one sort of permanent proscenium in one of the corners of the parking lot and maybe a couple of movable ones so that you can sort of direct the sound a little bit. And
all right. Well, let me have Lisa respond to those two suggestions, and then we'll come back to you, okay?
Sure. Well, in answer to the first comment, we did actually last year install several power boxes at the market to provide vendors, particularly vendors with value-added products, like things that needed to be kept cold, for them to use, not foreseeing maybe the explosion in food trucks that we are currently experiencing, people who want to be at the market mm-hmm. whose power needs surpass what we even installed. So we have addressed the electrical issue, but our capacity is not always such that we can have a vendor there who can only use that power. Sometimes they need to augment or supplement the power that they have. In answer to the second question, we are trying to have more dedicated performance space at the market. We do have performers who are booked to play on the Walnut Street area near the city tent on the last Saturday of every month as part of our Art at the Market programming that we do in conjunction with Urbana's Public Arts program. So these are things that came up in our strategic planning exercise that we did a couple of years ago. And we're making steps to address them.
All right, and then your very bigger good. Picture question?
Yeah, the we have marketplaces like the marketplace of no ideas up, they're quasi-public. You can't actually go up there and engage in political speech or social, cultural speech. You can't pass out leaflets or anything without permission. Now, the activist organizations and whatever charities, et cetera, now are on one line parallel to Vine Street, moved from the other side. But the broader question about the deterioration of, public discourse and public spaces, it's actually going to be on the referendum in Urbana, at least, maybe in Champaign, too, with the idea of having some modality where these quasi-public spaces. There hasn't been too much problem with the farmers market. There was a little kerfuffle when it moved indoors a while back, but I'm glad to see that's happening, but I just wanted to highlight the broader concept, and maybe the person that traveled can talk about what's going on in other places as far as beyond the market mercantile aspect, but the broader cultural things, both the performance and maybe more explicitly cultural and political discourse.
All right, I think we get the gist of the question. We thank you very much for the call. Janine, as you've traveled around, all farmers markets are not created equal, and it seems like there's some that were just dedicated to, we're here to sell produce, and that's it. And then there are others that really have folded in a lot of things like live performances, like that sort of civic engagement that the caller was talking about. Can you think of, were there some examples where the marketplace, the farmers market, became the marketplace of ideas?
You know, it's so interesting because as I was listening to the caller, I drew some parallels, and I think there might be some correlation with university towns. So where there's a major university, that farmers market tends to have a robust amount of activity. In the Bloomington, Indiana farmers market, for example, I found a number of the university professors were also farmers, and they also had courses at the university. And one of the professors that I interviewed talked about having her students go to the market for cultural sorts of studies where they would go and interview people. And her comments were more about how she introduced these students who were not accustomed to shopping at a farmer's market to the variety of personalities and different kinds of activity that you will find. And it's interesting because, to get back to your point of, is this a place to buy food or is this a place to gather? You will see people in both schools. There are some purists who say, I want to get my beets and my corn and my raspberries, and then I want to go home. And then other people are saying that I want to introduce my child to different experiences. There are a number of markets that have programs. Some of them are named Sprouts, where there's information. I was talking to a market organizer not too long ago, and I found it interesting because they had a lot of chef demonstrations, and she was identifying that people come to see the chef demonstrations and not necessarily shop. So the observers of the entertainment and the shoppers were not the same people. And that has some implications in terms of, as the market moves forward, how do they want to operate? Because if you recall, when farmers markets were first founded, it was to help the farmers stay in business, because we continue to lose a lot of farms, but these smaller diversified farms were being lost at an alarming rate. And so that's one of the reasons that the renaissance of markets started. So there are so many issues, and that's why I find the topic fascinating.
Well, and I want to follow up on that with Lisa in terms of the impact that farmers markets have on farmers as relates to our current drought here in Illinois and Indiana. We're, of course, experiencing a serious drought. Are you seeing any impact from drought conditions on the food that's being sold at Market at the Square?
I would say, by and large, if you expect to see it at a farmer's market in July, we've got it. Many of our farmers irrigate, so they do have water, and the produce is growing as it normally would, maybe a couple weeks ahead of schedule because our spring started so early, so everything is a little bit ahead of schedule. However, we have seen, particularly with a sweet corn vendor, that is has been a regular at the market for many years. They are from further south. They're from Effingham, and the drought has been bad down there, and he is not equipped to irrigate, and that and he has not been at the market yet this year. I will actually be speaking with him today or tomorrow to find out how things are going. I try to check in with him every week. But many of our patrons who are experiencing the drought, you know, we all know it hasn't rained. It's been very, very hot. That's the other thing, is this relentless sunshine and heat on top of no rain has been really, really rough on the corn. They're experiencing the drought, yet they cannot understand, some of them, why this particular vendor hasn't been at the market yet. So it's going back to seasonality and nature, and sort of, you know, that's kind of what happens. Just like when a freeze wipes out an entire fruit crop, and sometimes you don't realize what that means until it's time for that fruit to be in season, until it's time for peaches to be in season or apples to be in season. You're not really, you know, it was bad and you know you lost everything, but until you don't have it, most of us don't feel that impact. So we're experiencing a little bit of drought-related issues at the market, but by and large, produce is available.
All right, let's go next to caller on line 3 in Danville. Good morning.
Yes, this has to do with the pre-made food, like cakes and pies and cookies. You know, like the different states at different times keeps changing the rules of what is it. You know, cook, prepare that. And another tangent is educating the consumer out here that they don't know much about produce anymore. In fact, I have ran across the people saying, I don't want to buy from the farmer's market. I want something from California because it's fresher, even though it's grown in California, and something grown in the same county that we're standing in, because it can get there in the 36 to 48 hours.
Okay.
Compared to something just down the road.
All right. Thanks very much for the question. Janine, there is this perception we have, maybe because of advertisements thrown our way, that, oh, well, I really don't want oranges from anywhere except Florida, or there's this particular crop that's really about, you know, California or something like that. Do you find that some people sort of have that perception, and maybe it's a misconception?
There are so many complex issues that feed into this topic. Michael Pollan, who is a nationally known writer, wrote a book called The Omnivore's Dilemma, and he writes very prolifically on this, on that marketers over the course of years have convinced people that it is a chore to cook, and why would you want to cook anything when you can just buy something frozen, or, you know, stick a pre-made dinner into the microwave. The dearth of cooking skills has played into a lot of that. Yeah, certainly there's the idea of cleanliness. People want something that's scrubbed within an inch of its life. I remember someone was saying, you know, ew, those potatoes have dirt on them. And, you know, if you don't know how potatoes are grown, potatoes grow underneath, you know, in the soil underneath, and when they come out of the soil, they have dirt. And so people like me might say, wow, great, you know, they didn't put any sort of washing chemical on it. It's fresh out of the ground because you can see the soil is still on it. And but then other farmers have, you know, very efficient washing machines that do clean off the dirt. So it's not very often that you would see farmers market potatoes with dirt on them. But it just kind of drives home the idea that we have come pretty far from our food source. A lot of people do not have vegetable gardens in their backyard, so they don't understand what's required to grow something and get it to the table.
Lisa, what about the other aspect of this that the caller mentioned, this idea that there may be certain products, certain produce that we've become comfortable with the idea that they come from a particular state other than Illinois or Indiana, and are therefore somehow better because grow better there?
It's all marketing. But the fact is, just about everything will grow here, except for citrus and coffee and bananas and a few other things. But I think it's marketing. You hear, you hear about a certain place's sweet corn or strawberries, and you're inclined to think that that's the best because that's how it's been marketed to you in supermarkets. One thing about what Janine is talking about, education and people being horrified that there's dirt on produce at farmers markets. One way that we have really tried to address this education aspect, you know, while it would be nice to educate everybody at a farmers market, I think it really does start with kids. And we have programming, as Jeannie mentioned. Ours is called Sprouts at the Market, where it's a three-pillared program where it's about nutrition, farm linkage, which is the part about meeting your farmer and knowing where food comes from and how it grows, and also healthy mealtime habits and eating habits. So I think that education component is incredibly important. And when you have kids young, they will return to farmers markets later on in their life. I'm a shining example of that. You know, when I was a teenager, maybe I thought that growing food was kind of dumb and I wasn't really that interested in it. But then I come back later and here I am doing what I do. But also I've gotten feedback from parents who have said, I've never seen Susie eat a green bean ever. And she tried a raw one for the first time. I've had somebody else say, I now have a five-year-old goat cheese aficionado because of your program. So kids are getting exposed to food through these kinds of educational programs, not just at farmers markets, but maybe at other events too. And so I think it's really important to start with them.
I want to add that I have a chef friend who goes to his daughter's school, and he has parents come up to him at school functions and says, you know, they say, thanks for nothing. You know, now my kids won't go through the drive-thru because we have to, you know, cook all our food at home. And so it's kind of interesting how there's a little bit of backlash against him. One thing that I will also add that one of the joys of my farmer's market trip is I was able to find these foods that you would not necessarily expect. In Missouri, I found a farmer who's growing figs. And if you know, as Lisa mentioned, fruit that requires a warmer climate do not grow in the Midwest, citrus being one of them. Figs also do not grow because they don't do well in the freeze. But this farmer has found a way. He uses geothermal heat. He has water that is heated from the sun, and then that runs in pipes under the ground, and he has these big, high tunnels, almost like a three-story greenhouse over these figs, and that was the longest line at the Tower Grove Farmers Market, and, you know, it's within a 20-minute drive of downtown St. Louis. So people get really excited about finding things grown by these farmers who are doing things in an innovative way.
And here I only thought figs grew in Newton-shaped packaging.
Indeed.
I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there, but I want to say thank you to our guest this morning. Jeannie McLaughlin is a food writer, blogger, and founder of the Rustic Kitchen Cooking School. She's also the author of Farmers Markets of the Heartland, a book which recounts her visits to farmers markets throughout the Midwest, including a number here in Illinois. The book also contains a number of interesting recipes using foods typically found at farmers markets. Jeannie, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. It was a delight.
See you soon, Jeannie.
And Lisa Braltz.
Yes, August 4th.
Lisa Braltz is Economic Development Specialist Director from Urbana's Market at the Square. It takes place rain or shine every Saturday morning from 7 until noon from May to early November at the corner of Illinois and Vine Streets in downtown Urbana. Lisa, thank you for being with us.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
You've been listening to a program from the Focus Archives. Much of our local productions, including past interviews from Focus and local news features, are available on our website anytime you want to listen at will.illinois.edu. At this point, we'll take our usual break for news, and then Focus will continue. So please stay tuned.
Today's broadcast is made possible in part by the Friends of WILL and by Strawberry Fields Natural Food Store. Strawberry Fields offers natural vitamins, health and beauty products, household cleaning products, and pet foods. Strawberry Fields on Springfield Avenue in Urbana. Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
Good morning, everyone. This is Dave Dickey with a look at the commodity markets as we enter the final few hours of trading for this week. A reminder, we have a long weekend ahead of us, and the electronic trade will not open until Monday evening at 7 o'clock. With that in mind, U.S. grain and soybean futures are extending their losses in the open outcry session as traders are banking some profits on prior gains and exiting some positions ahead of the three-day weekend. There was a lot of new longs in the marketplace, especially in that soybean pit, and they're probably taking advantage of the all-time contract highs that we saw yesterday. Meanwhile, wheat is under pressure on news this morning from Russia, which said that even though the crop is not going to be as robust as they first initially thought, there will be plenty of wheat still for export, and they are not interested in putting on any tariffs or export quotas on their wheat crop. Let's go ahead and look at particulars in Kansas City. September wheat at 871, down 18 and 3 quarters. December 896 and 3 quarters, down 19 and a quarter. September wheat in Chicago at 864, down 19 and a half. December